it's third-party cookies going away and mobile ad IDs going away, that's drastically going to change our industry. And yeah, a lot of people are not prepared. They don't even they can't even fathom how to set up an infrastructure to support a world without it.
Early to bed, early to rise, eat right and advertise. Early to bed, early to rise. And one more thing, get your name out there.
So this week, we are super psyched to welcome Nancy Marzouk to the show. Nancy is the CEO and founder of MediaWalla, which is an identity resolution company. Before founding MediaWalla in 2013, Nancy was CRO at Tagman, which was acquired by Insighten, VP of sales at Ignition One, and later X+1, which was acquired by Rocket Fuel, Director of Partnership Strategy at Drive PM, part of Aquantive, which was acquired by Microsoft. And she was on the legendary team at L90, which actually acquired DoubleClick's media business back in 2002 and was then acquired by Ask Jeeves, which was acquired by IAC. So my first question is, aside from MediaWalla, have you ever worked for a company that was not acquired, and what was wrong with them?
I'm trying to think, my gosh. Actually, the very first company that I worked for, Venture Direct, which is this, was not acquired, but that was like a family owned business. I don't actually know what happened to them. I think that they just kind of.
So how did you end up at so many ripe acquisition targets? Was it just coincidence or was this a plan?
I think it was coincidence. And part of it was just, you know, there was a lot going on in the market in general.
Is it fun to be acquired or is it stressful? It's never happened to me.
It can be very exciting. I think, you know, the first time it happened, everyone's like, whoa, what's going on here? I think after the second acquisition, you're kind of like, okay, you know, I know what to expect. And then once you've gone through three or four, it's just like, you know what the signs are to look for. You know, are they, you know, are we looking at layoffs? What are the things that, you know, what are the signs in terms of is it going to be a successful acquisition or not?
So what was your first exposure to ad tech or advertising marketing then?
So I started very early. I mean, we were selling, you know, $25 CPM, you know, run of network ads with no targeting. We actually had a whole bunch of websites. It was an ad network, so collective of websites. And there used to be, you know, it was the dial-up internet at that point. You dialed up onto the internet through the phone line, and you actually had this banner, or this, you know, this banner at the bottom of your screen, which included an ad, and that was a banner ad, right? So it was like a bar at the bottom of your screen. And I remember, like, we were selling those ads, and they were timed, so like. People could, like, you could get up away from your computer and the ads would still be flipping one after another every couple of seconds. There were companies like All Advantage, I think was the name of one of those, the companies that, you know, they went under. And
These are ISPs, know, huh?
ISPs, right? So those were really primarily where most of the ads appeared at that point, because it was, you know.
So it's like a frame around the.
Yeah, frame. Exactly.
Well, who were the buyers of these ads? It was like typical.
You know, that was, it was back in the day. It was, you know, I'm Avenue A. I mean, I remember my first contract huge contract that I signed, over $1 million was Avenue A for MTV. And that was, and we were selling those kinds of, you know, run a network ads, mid, you know, 97, you know, 98, something like that.
What was the, so this was Adventure Network or Venture Direct?
Yeah, it was the Adventure Network, correct, yes.
What's that office like, and what was the company like?
you know, ironically, they had an open floor, which is, you know, back then, you know, that concept of, in terms of an open floor, you know, was really for sales organizations, right? You know, it was energetic, right? There were a lot of young people that were selling. And back then it was like, you know, there was the DoubleClick Network, 24/7 Real Media, and, you know, and Engage. Us, there weren't, and there was Toucan Media, you know, Flycast. There was actually a company called Ad Auction that was prior, ironically, Ad Auction was an early version of Right Media that went under before Right Media was, it was a bidding platform for advertising. And that was also in, you know, in the 1990s, like late 1990s. But it was way ahead of its time. And I mean, I think a lot of some of the great ideas that we've had in our industry, some of them started like, you know, they were around in the early days and just really never took off successfully. You know, DoubleClick had this product called Boomerang, and that was
retargeting.
That was retargeting. And that was in 1999. And, you know, that's when they launched that product, and there was no scale in return. we complain about the scale today. So you can imagine that there was like no scale back then.
So when did L90 happen, and what was L90? Because this is a major player that a lot of people haven't heard of.
Yeah. So the way that I got introduced to L90 is working for the Adventure Network. We were actually looking for ad serving technology, and L90 had, similar to DoubleClick, they had ad serving, which, you know, DoubleClick had their Dart solution, and L90 had something called Ad Monitor. L90 also had a premium ad network with brand publishers, very similar to DoubleClick. And then they had a second tier network where it was more the mid long tail publishers, not very, you know, very brand oriented, where you could run, you know, very cost effective you know, ad campaigns. And that was called Zonfire, and that competed with the Sonar Network at DoubleClick. So actually, from a core product standpoint, the two companies had very similar product offerings. And in most cases, were on most media plans together. And back then, most of the media buying was done through ad agencies. There were some direct advertisers. Back then we used to, Casino on Net was like the biggest, you know, we don't do that stuff anymore, but they used to spend a ton in ads. They were a gambling company, and they used to spend a ton of dollars in the US, on marketing, and they were direct. But most of the, you know, brand clients were all agency. Whereas now that's also somewhat shifted a little bit. So the company was public. So it was a public company.
But you joined right after around the time of the dot-com crash. What was going on at that company then?
Quite frankly, like, I think everybody who was let go, most people kind of saw it coming, you know, they kept the people who were contributing to the top line revenue, because obviously, you know, you needed your sellers, and, you know, they trimmed whatever fat they could.
So that was an interesting transaction, because DoubleClick had this media business, and it was actually most of their revenue, and then they decided to sell it and focus on their ad server, their technology. So was that surprising to you, being on the L90 side, that DoubleClick would do that?
It actually made sense. I mean, they had gotten to this, I think, point where they felt that the tech was really what was going to power the growth of what they had. And when they sold to L90, their media business, media had really started to become much more competitive. You know, you had started to see like the rise of walled gardens, that, you know, and so, you know, in terms of the longevity of that business, the media business, there was going to need to be a significant investment. And so I think they kind of said, you know what, we got two paths we can go down here. We can't invest significantly in both lines of business. We have to invest in one or the other, and let's do the tech route.
Yeah.
And as part of that, we actually sold our tech to them. We sold AdMonitor. So it was an exchange where L90 sold AdMonitor to DoubleClick. We acquired their media business. We actually, as part of that, got some very cost-effective ad serving because we no longer had our own ad server to run ads. So,
continue to serve your ads?
They did. Yeah. Okay.
So you got a good price?
So we got a good price. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. And I would say too, what we got from the deal was some tremendous talent. You know, Bill Wise, he came over as part of the acquisition. Mike Walrath, who then, started Right Media. He came over as part of the acquisition. So we got some really great, great talent that came over.
Was the strategic vision around display? It included search as well, though, right?
It was primarily display. There was actually an email business as well. Okay. As part of that. So we did some email marketing. It was actually fairly effective until all the stuff about spam came up, that killed that business, right? nobody wanted to do anything in email, which ironically, if you think about it now, email is, just that identifier is the primary identifier now that people use. So it's crazy how things tend to come full circle, in our space.
So Max Worldwide, this was a new name, or Max Online, or Max Worldwide.
When we merged L90 and DoubleClick together, we formed Max. It was actually called Max Worldwide because there was there was some offline components to some of the stuff that we were doing. It wasn't all digital. Yeah. So.
But it was global.
But it was global. Yes.
Worldwide.
Exactly.
So you mentioned Mike Walrath, a kind of a legendary character. Who I've never met. What was he like?
A, B, C. A, always, B, B, C, closing. Always be closing. Always be closing.
We were all very young, very, very aggressive, and, very strong negotiators is what I would say. So we all kind of knew what we wanted and, didn't have a problem asking for it. And I think Mike actually had the idea for Right Media and wanted to incubate it out of, Max Online. And at that point, for whatever reasons that are beknownst to me, we couldn't accommodate him. So that's when he actually left the business and then, started to, incubate Right Media.
He moved into a closet in Joe Zawadzki's office.
He did. Yes.
That's the rumor.
Yes.
Although there's some debate over whether there were actually windows or not. So it might not have been a closet.
I actually have seen I've seen it because I worked at that office. There were no windows in that space.
It was a closet.
It was not that small of a closet, but it was a closet.
A large closet.
It was a large closet. Yes.
So were you at Max Online / Max Worldwide when Ask Jeeves acquired them?
Yes. I was there for the Excite Network when they acquired us. And I was there for when Ask Jeeves acquired us. And then I was there when IEC acquired us. So I was there through all of those acquisitions.
For our listeners, can you just explain what happened?
So the Excite Network actually had a search engine themselves. And Ask Jeeves actually, wanted to kind of, we created various different products that actually helped with the search functionality. Back then, the issue with search was that there was not much scale in search. So people started to try to figure out how they could syndicate search to get more people to search through syndication. And so there were...
So there's no huge Google on the market at the time.
Yeah. And so Right. And so like people actually through the banner ads used to actually, there was tech in the ads that would actually look at the content in the page and serve up search listings in a banner ad. And then click on contextually and then click. And so, and that was what was called syndicated search. And you would click and you'd pay for, the person would pay for the click, just as if somebody had searched on a search engine and clicked on one of those top ads that you see in the top of the page. It was, you know,
so visually speaking.
So imagine I'm on a cooking site.
Yeah.
You know, and somebody who's selling cooking pans wants to, you know, they have a search listing for cooking pans. Mm. When I'm on the cooking site and I, you know, within the content of that cooking site, the word pan appears through the context of the page, then the, you know, the banner ad that's at the top of that page would actually have a search listing, not an image. It would be a contextual listing within that,
so it's a clickable text link.
It's exactly, but within a banner ad. So, and that was what was called syndicated search. So it was a way to expand search. And so Ask Jeeves, they were looking for a way to expand search. And what we had was we had the ability to offer this syndicated search. And because we also had an ad network, you know, we had access to websites where we could contextually drop those, text links, if you will. And they actually, that was a full on merger. They brought everything in, Ask Jeeves. So when we were at the Excite Network, we, Max, that was when we became Max Online only, when we sold to the Excite Network. And those, and Max Online and the Excite Network were two totally separate entities.
So they got Excite as well. Okay. And did your office life change? Did you move into your space?
We did. We did move. It's still in Manhattan.
But then IAC came along. So that was Barry Diller started them, right? They're sort of like a conglomerate holding company. Right. Yeah. So what
and
happened
that
then?
Was, yeah. That was a whole different ball game. I mean, and I would say because we were living in the digital realm for, I was in the digital realm being acquired by digital entities for most of my, for most of my career at that point, that when we got to IAC, I mean, they're, very kind of old school publishing mentality, the way they ran their websites were like they were publications, not digital websites. And there were many different brands under the IAC umbrella at that point. And they were all separate and a lot, and they really wanted to change the scope of what was being sold and what was being marketed by Ask Jeeves. So there were a lot of changes that happened. And actually most of, I would say not the executives, because as you start to go through one acquisition, you lose some of the executives, you go through another acquisition, you lose some more. And, when we had gotten to IAC Interactive Corp, there were very few of us left that were part of the, management.
You're the last woman standing.
Yeah. And so, and it got to the point where it was just like, this is not what we're, it just didn't make sense for us.
They got rid of the word Jeeves after a while, I believe, right?
Yeah. It was ask.com, right? Just ask.com.
As a strategic innovation. I've been sort of obsessed with Drive PM over the years. Part of a quantive, and it's credited with doing a lot of innovative and interesting stuff. So I do want to ask you about that. So how did you end up at Drive PM? It has nothing to do with automobiles. I know.
Yeah, no, it has nothing to do with automobiles. So I ended up at Drive PM. I was actually at, oh my gosh, I'm trying to think.
It would have been 2005, 2006.
Yeah. So it was not that long after they started. The company was still fairly new at that point. And most of their revenue came from Avenue A at that point.
Because they were started by Aquantive, right? Weren't they?
It was started by Aquantive. And I would say that kind of Drive PM probably started as the first trading desk, you know, for an agency. What they did do is they did innovate on some technology, specifically retargeting, where they further segmented retargeting. So what I mean by that is they added additional targeting to retargeting. Okay. So if somebody goes to, you know, retargeting is just somebody goes to the site, you pixeled them and you've cookied them and then when you see them on another site, you show them an ad. What Drive PM did was they said, okay, well, there's not everybody who goes to the website is created equally. So let's try to, you know, figure out what are the most premium people that went to the website that didn't convert and the less premium. And let's figure out how we find those people again in the right, you know, better context, better time of day, things that were more indicative of actually getting them to convert. So there was almost like a little bit of more logic put on the boomerang, the double click boomerang methodology.
So how was that logic added? Was it based on their behavior on the website? It was observed, or was it offline data that had somehow been attached?
No, it was all digital. There was an aspect of behavioral marketing, right? Looking at where those people who had been to the website, what are the other sites that they visited? So, you know, are they the right profile of somebody who would convert on your website? Yes or no? If yes, then great, I'll retarget them. If no, then I won't. So
it's kind of like premium retargeting.
It's premium retargeting, exactly.
But they, I was reading about Drive PM, it said you could target using Prism clusters and demos. Yeah. And how was that done?
So what you do is based on the geolocation of the ad using the IP, you infer, you basically can look up a Prism cluster.
Okay.
So it's matching it, you know, and again, that was a form of, so that was another, you know, so they did the kind of premium retargeting and then they had the reach stuff. And that was the Prism clusters were part of the reach.
We had Jen O'Connell on as a guest and she said Drive PM invented retargeting.
Yeah. So I would say Boomerang was probably the people, they DoubleClick invented it. I would say that Drive PM perfected it.
So Drive PM is based in Seattle, but you were working out of New York?
Yes. So it was very interesting office. There were two employees, Drive PM employees in New York. I was one of them.
Two.
And the rest of the office was Atlas.
Ad server.
Which was another ad server. Yes. And we actually, they ended up, I think, merging those two businesses together later on, which made a lot of sense. When I got to Drive PM, they were really starting to try to go out and market to other agencies, other clients, the media that they were selling to, you know, to Avenue A. So most of the revenue came from Avenue A clients. And they said, you know what, now let's go out into the market and see if we can win other agency business. And it was a little bit of a challenge. I mean, you know, you pretty much, they have already an agency that's under their umbrella. I actually went there to do more kind of BD stuff where it was more strategic partnerships where we were trying to figure out like if there was an opportunity to sell the tech to, you know, to a large publisher where they would actually market it potentially themselves and, you know, and it would be kind of out almost like a white label.
Encore, you successful?
It was challenging. Yeah. It was challenging. Even on the ad serving side, I think, you know, that business, struggled a little bit in comparison to DoubleClick. I mean, most publishers use DoubleClick at the time, not Atlas.
Is that because Atlas was associated with an agency?
I think the ad server itself, Atlas, was really, I mean, it was originally scoped for an agency for the buy side, not the sell side of the business. So I, you know, so I think that a lot of the bells and whistles that DoubleClick had for publishers, particularly around yield management and you know, some of the other features that Dart for Publishers had, those weren't built into native into the Atlas platform, and were things that they added on later. But at that point, I feel like the market had somewhat been established.
Get your name out there.
In 2007, then Microsoft, I mean, it was a busy year for acquisitions. Microsoft ended up acquiring Aquantive, which owned DrivePM and also Atlas and also Avenue A. And I guess you were part of that, but they spend lots of money, $6 billion. What was your reaction to that?
I'm not out of turn here, but I think most people felt that the acquisition was not successful.
Oh, it was considered unsuccessful. And actually, it was written down later. So I think Microsoft admitted it.
Yes, so it was not successful. It kind of goes back to almost similar to what happened with IAC Interactive Corp and Ask Jeeves, right? You have a very innovative digital company that you are acquiring, and that's not who the acquirer is. And so in order to, you know, in order to bring that kind of entity in and get the most out of it, there really has to be some significant change, and that didn't happen. And it's also even like a cultural thing. I mean, you think about just operationally, you know, how Microsoft, even though they are a software company at their core, they didn't grow up in the same age as, you know, as Aquantive. I mean, Aquantive was purely digital. You know, the tech that, you know, that supported Aquantive wasn't around prior to 1990. Potentially it could have been successful. It was a completely separate, you know, owned entity. And maybe if they took some of the assets and then spun off some of the assets a little early on, like, you know, did Microsoft really need an agency? You know, probably not. They probably could have offloaded that a little earlier than they did.
So you're at all these kind of very exciting moments in ed tech history.
Yes.
Can you describe the X Plus One, what you did there, and then the Rockefeller acquisition and what the impact was?
So X Plus One, I started there just when the company had changed names from Poindexter Systems. And I actually remember sitting down with Joe Zawatsky, flipping through a PowerPoint presentation in December prior to, you know, I started that year in January, and we were looking at this, and he was walking me through his vision for this media business, which was basically, it was the DSP, right? That's what it was, right?
And MediaMath.
Yeah, it was media, exactly. So, yeah, and so, you know, so I was like, okay. And that's actually what X Plus One, you know, that's what we executed on, was the DSP, right? Which was actually, you know, exactly what ended up when he left. He kind of had a little bit of a hiatus and then started MediaMath. You know, but we, X Plus One had the first DSP in the marketplace. And I remember we stood it up for Omnicom, and I believe the client was Vonage.
What was
and
it called?
It was just,
that was a Media Plus One.
Yeah, it was Media Plus One was what we called. We had Media Plus One and Site Plus One. There were two different products.
Oh, right. Site optimization. Okay.
Right. Yeah. And so, and we kind of started down this path of selling media and trying to sell kind of this DSP out in the market. But then we also had this site optimization business where we had tags on site that actually allowed us to optimize people's websites, which actually competed with Omniture's Test and Target.
When did Rocket Fuel come along?
Rocket Fuel, so we grew that. So that business, when I started, it was basically, I want to say maybe $10 million in revenue. When I left, we had about $40 million in running revenue. And then And then I left prior to the Rocket Fuel acquisition. When I was at X Plus One, we got offered more money than what they ended up selling to Rocket Fuel for. And I feel that Rocket Fuel really undervalued some of the assets that X Plus One had, because some of them weren't important to them.
Let me ask you about MediaWala. So you started it, I think, in 2013. So you've been there all. So what was the original opportunity that you identified?
So I started the business for a couple of different reasons. On a personal note, I felt that I had gotten to this point in my career where I'd had such a great, successful career and had been so fortunate in my career that I really wanted a way to give back to the industry. And I felt that one of those things that was kind of holding it back was the inability to connect things together in a seamless way so that people could actually innovate. And that's really, what we do at MediaWala. We power identity resolution. We allow people to resolve identity.
Are you optimistic about the future of ad tech when you look forward like 3-4 years, something like that?
I think there's going to be a come to Jesus.
I think
it's coming.
Feels like it.
Yeah. I think it's coming. And I think that a lot of the companies that have been kind of, call it playing in the shadows, I hope that those companies, that they just simply go away, right?
The shifty middle people? Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
And I do feel that I think there's going to be some kind of, I don't want to say like the bubble's going to burst, but there's going to be something that's going to happen. And the result of that will be a really good thing. And it's third-party cookies going away and mobile ad IDs going away. That's drastically going to change our industry. And yeah, a lot of people are not prepared. Thank you. They can't even fathom how to set up an infrastructure to support a world without it. So it's going to be a very painful process. And a lot of companies, they can't function without those things. So I think it's going to be challenging. We're kind of like, let's just get there already.
Enough.
Well,
the cookies had the longest death scene in history.